What is up and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always by my co-host, David Drogemeyer. And on today's show, joined by one of the founding members of the show, John Kegley, with us today as well. But today's episode first is brought to you by BuiltBar.com, the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. And you can save $10 off your order at BuiltBar.com with the promo code Locked On. Before we get started, we are three writers who got our start at San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog. We've been covering the Chargers now for over five seasons, doing our own Facebook Live show, Chargers Domination Live, which airs weekly during the season. And now this is our third season as the host of the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, guys, well, we do have a very fun show for you guys today, but unfortunately, we have to start with some sad news because former Charger Max Turk has passed away at the age of 26. So we're going to talk just a little bit of Max Turk and just what his career ended up being, what they thought his career was going to be, and just the other honors and things he was able to achieve throughout his career and kind of celebrate his life a little bit. But then we're going to get into a lighter segment, getting into some fan voicemails, talking about some draft redos and some hypothetical situations that we could potentially have seen during the draft and if we would have done them, and other voicemails about the rivalry between the Chargers and the Broncos going into the season, and much more before ending the show with a little Father's Day special from John Kegley, talking about some famous father-son duos in the NFL, especially some Chargers that had those connections, before getting into a Pro Football Focus article about some of the biggest one-hit wonders of all time, where a couple of Chargers end up making the list. But let's go ahead and get into it. On Sunday, the football world got some sad news when former Los Angeles Chargers center Max Turk passed away at the age of 26. This is Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer with your Locked On Chargers lead story. It was officially announced on Sunday by the USC Trojans and by the family of Max Turk that he did indeed pass away at the age of 26. It has now been reported, and the family has released, that he did pass away during a hike where he collapsed on one of his favorite trails in the Cleveland National Forest. So we just wanted to take a minute to send our condolences to the Turk family and talk about Max Turk, the football player, the one the Chargers drafted in the third round of the 2016 draft after a very good career with the USC Trojans. And after the 2016 draft, Tom Telesco came out and talked about two reasons why they drafted Max Turk, saying he was smart and had a great football intelligence and loved to prepare, and he had great feet. He could move, he can pull, and get to the second level and block linebackers. And this was part of a reshuffling of the Chargers and their philosophies, wanting to get more athletic offensive linemen that could move around a little bit more. And it never ended up working out for Max Turk with the Chargers or in the NFL, David, because injuries and a suspension ended up derailing his career.
Yeah, Daniel, he only played in one game and one snap, and that was for the Arizona Cardinals. That was the synopsis of his NFL career. His former general manager that drafted him to the Chargers, Tom Telesco, put out a statement and said, "The news is hard to process, and all I can think of is how unbelievably sad I am, and all of us at the Chargers are, upon hearing of Max's passing. I'm heartbroken for his parents and family. Max had a tremendous passion for football and a quiet toughness that those who didn't know him may have underestimated, but all of us who knew him appreciated. Our thoughts and prayers go out to Max's family during this extremely difficult time." Yeah, we didn't see a whole lot of Max Turek in a Chargers uniform because of an ACL injury he was trying to recover from college that he never, unfortunately, got right. We were excited at the prospects of seeing an athletic offensive lineman get out there and pull and show that athleticism, but unfortunately, that never manifested itself with the Chargers, Daniel.
Yeah, and the next season, when you thought he would come back healthy and have a fresh start and have a chance to compete, as Tom Telesco said that he would, even coming out of USC after the 2015 season, he said he would come in and compete with Trevor Robinson and Chris Watt, the centers on the team at the time. And it was further pushed back because of a suspension due to PEDs in 2017, which caused him to miss four games, in which he was released from the Chargers after that and went on to play with the Arizona Cardinals till the end of the 2017 season. And he never played again after he was released from Arizona. But he did have a great college career. Shotgun Spratling of USCFootball.com kind of gave a synopsis of his career, saying that Turk was a force on the UFC offensive line for 3.5 years until tearing his ACL against Washington on October receiver this season. Wherever a team needs Turk, he can play. He played all three offensive line positions during his time as a Trojan, starting at left tackle as a freshman before eventually becoming a stud center. So, David, even though he did not have the illustrious NFL career, that is not to take away from the rest of the football accomplishments that he had.
Absolutely not. And that excellence kind of started for Max Turk in high school. A two-way lineman at Santa Margarita High, Turk helped lead the Eagles to a CIF Division I state championship in 2011 as a senior. Then he enrolled at USC, earning freshman All-American honors in 2012 as he became the first ever true freshman to start at left tackle for the Trojans. By playing college football, Turek followed in the footsteps of his father, Greg, who played tight end for Brown University. Max Turek's family put out a statement and said, "Max died on June 20th, 2020, while hiking with his parents on a favorite trail in the Cleveland National Forest. Max loved his teammates, coaches, and schools. Max was a loving son and an older brother, and his passing leaves a giant hole in our hearts. His strength and work ethic is an inspiration to many." Again, our thoughts and prayers go out to the Turk family. It's incredibly sad to see such a young man pass away. All of our thoughts and prayers are with them.
Absolutely. And what this does is at least gives us a chance to kind of reflect on his football accomplishments and just talk about what kind of player and what kind of man he was. And you can tell by so many of his former teammates reaching out and just putting out public statements of their grief, how much he meant to so many people. But we do have two more segments to get into. We have a loaded fan voicemail segment coming up right after this, and before ending the show with a couple of one-hit wonders and a Father's Day special. But first, I got to tell you guys that today's episode is brought to you by BuiltBar.com, the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. You can get them in 20 different flavors, and they are all soft and easy to chew and 100% covered in chocolate. We all need healthy snacks these days, and you're not going to find any that are as high in protein and fiber and low on sugars and carbs than Built Bars, and they all taste great, which is the absolutely most important part of a protein bar. Right now, you guys can even save some money on Built Bars, because if you go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you can save $10 off your first order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON, all caps, one word, for $10 off your first order at BuiltBar.com. All right, well, it's time to get into some fan voicemails, and I want to thank everyone who called in, because we don't get enough fan voicemails from you guys. We can't get enough, and we love to go to you guys and get your voices on the show as much as possible. If you've never called in or if you want to call in, the number is 323-524-7924, and we have a couple more that we won't be able to get into today, but we are going to start with Chargers Nerd, who is talking about something that's very important and also giving us a couple of hypothetical situations about the draft to see if we would have changed things for the Chargers in 2020. Let's hear what he has to say.
Hi, friends. It's the Chargers Nerd. Up front, I just want to say thank you for being a part on the show to discuss Black Lives Matter, both independently and at its intersection with football. I know we're all here to talk football, but there comes a point when issues in society are so important and at their heart, hopefully, beyond party politics, and just deserve to be discussed everywhere we talk about anything. Though it won't mean anything moving forward, I thought it might be fun to do some after-the-fact what-if type scenarios. So I have two scenarios I'd like you to make a choice for. I know I never stick to one question on this show. So the first scenario, knowing now how the first five picks of the NFL draft and the rest of the Chargers draft and many free agency have played out, who would you go back and take with the sixth overall pick? Would you stick to Herbert, or would you go for a defender or a left tackle? I will say that I would go with Cedric Wills, and here's why. He played right tackle. Saban says he can play left tackle, and I think you just put him in the room with the log and Pickens, and you figure it out. Swing tackles are important, and injuries happen all the time, so I don't think it's a luxury pick or burying anyone on the roster. So the second scenario, let's say the Chargers could have traded the first, second, third, and seventh round picks this year to move up to pick 3 or 4. So would you essentially trade away Kenneth Murray and KJ Hill to upgrade from Herbert to Tua? As much as I already love Herbert and these two guys, I'm going to say that I would take that trade and go get Tua. That's not to be negative about the path the Chargers took, but I think if you put yourself on the record, you can look back in a few years and see if you made a good call. So thank you very much, as always, and go Bolts, and also Rivers on the Colts.
All right, well, it is not a Chargers Nerd question unless there's multiple questions, Daniel. So thank you for calling in again. We always appreciate it. And I think these are two very good questions. So John, I know that Justin Herbert was far from your favorite pick in the draft, and it's not the guy that you would have went with that pick. So if you could go back knowing who would have been there with the sixth overall pick, who would you have selected?
The same guy I said I wanted before the draft, and that is Tristan Wirfs, who I believe would have helped this offensive line tremendously. Knowing that we had one side of the offensive line already fixed, Tristan Wirfs would have easily played on the other side and made this offensive line that much better.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to look at all the tackles that got drafted, especially early in this draft class. The top four, Andrew Thomas included, Jedrick Wills, like he brought up. I mean, I was a big Jedrick Wills guy. He was one of my favorite prospects, and I would have been definitely okay with it. Obviously, in that case, you don't necessarily have the future of quarterback on your roster, but you still have Tyrod Taylor, and you give him a very formidable offensive line to go into the season with, and end up filling one of your most questionable holes still left on the roster. So getting to the second part of the question, a hypothetical in which the Chargers would trade their first, second, third, and seventh round picks to move up to get Tua Tagovailoa. I don't know if it necessarily would have taken that, because I think you could have easily moved up to the fourth pick, which is with the Giants, which is what I was desperately advocating for, knowing that the Giants wanted an offensive lineman. The argument is easy. You can trade back and the guy that you want will still be there when your selection comes, and he still would have been unless somebody traded with the Dolphins, but the Dolphins more than likely were going to take a quarterback anyways. That's a big haul, David, and I know you liked Tua, but especially with the injury risk and everything considered, would you make that trade?
Absolutely not. There is no way I'm going to give up that much draft capital for one guy. I mean, and yeah, we all love Tua on this show. We were very, very high on him. There was no secret about that. But I don't know, because the thing is with Justin Herbert, we don't know what we have in him. He has all the tools to be successful. It seems like the offense is going to be tailored around those gifts that he does have. So we'll see how that manifests itself. But giving away that many picks for an upgrade that you don't even know is going to be able to be on the football field is something that you just cannot. It's just a risk that you just cannot take. That's just too many picks to give up for a maybe upgrade.
One, you would take away, you know, the guy who's probably first in line to take over that wide receiver three position, as he says with KJ Hill. You're losing that linebacker and Kenneth Murray, who you expect to come in and kind of transform that position group. I could get behind something like my proposed trade that I had is, hey, if you want to send the first and the second and send a 2021 third round pick, which should have been a lot later if the Chargers do better this season, which I think that they will, I could have gotten behind that. That's what I would have offered, but I don't think it's out of the question for this package to come into play. I think most teams would probably want more high value picks, but for the low cost and the low risk of the move, I think you could have gotten it done for less. But I do think they were very good questions. So let's get into the next question. This one is from Joe from Jersey, a second time caller. Let's see what he has for us this week.
Hey guys, this is Joe from Jersey. It's my second phone call. You had made a statement about 2 weeks ago about the Chargers free agents that will happen after this year. You said, you know, Bosa, Pouncey, Allen, Ingram, King, Jenkins, Henry, and Davis, and Taylor would all be free agents. How the heck are we going to pay all those free agents, especially if the salary cap goes down after this year? Well, I thought it was pretty obvious who we should pay. I mean, definitely Bosa, sign him to that mega deal that he's going to get. Sign Keenan Allen to that kind of Amari, the guy that was wide receiver from Cooper from the Cowboys. And then obviously Hunter Henry, if he could stay healthy this year, we reward him with a deal. But, you know, Pouncey, he's a good player, but he's probably getting older. He probably can be let go, and we could probably replace him, you know, pretty efficiently. Ingram, I would love to keep, but I think he's going to cost too much to pair him off with Bosa. So we need Nuoso or some other guy to step up in that way. Desmond King, again, we drafted to replace him, so I think he's taken care of. Jenkins is a bit overrated, in my opinion, so he can move on, especially if we have Adderley. And Davis, he can go this year. I wouldn't care. He's not very good. So he can leave. And then Taylor, obviously, is going to get replaced by the, you know, the quarterback that we just drafted. So hopefully that makes sense, and hopefully we have enough money to do that. I think we do if we just get Bosa, Allen, and Henry. What are your thoughts on that? Love to hear it. Thanks, guys. Bolt up.
All right, so we have talked about many times on this podcast just the difficulties the Chargers are going to face after the 2020 season because they have so many starters set to enter free agency. You mentioned them in this. Joey Bosa, Keenan Allen, Hunter Henry, Mike Pouncey, Michael Davis, Desmond King, Tyrod Taylor, Rayshon Jenkins. I mean, there's even more than that. But obviously, John, some of those guys are much more important than other guys. So in this situation, he's saying the three guys that need to have the highest priority on them are Joey Bosa getting his mega deal, Keenan Allen getting a contract that's close to Amari Cooper's deal, which was 5 years, $100 million, and Hunter Henry, if he can stay healthy this season. I know that's what you want to see as well, him stay healthy, but in this situation, he's saying he's fine with no Mike Pouncey, no Melvin Ingram, even though he'd love to have him back. Rayshon Jenkins, Michael Davis, Desmond King, all of those guys can go. Do you agree with the way that he's targeting these three players and putting them at the top of the Chargers' 2021 free agency list?
The NFL has no idea when they are going to expect fans back in their stadiums, which obviously plays a big factor in the revenue that the league is going to get. So I think a lot of these teams are very hesitant to give out massive deals because they don't know if they're going to have the capital to be able to provide the money necessary to get those deals done.
When he mentions that in the voicemail, just saying that no one knows what the salary cap is going to be in 2021, but the Chargers, you would think, would be in a better situation than some others just because the number was supposed to be so big in 2021 as far as their available money to go spend on these guys. But yes, I mean, that has to be a major holdup into why you haven't seen anything. But at the same time, you got to prioritize, right? I mean, there's just no way you can lose all of those guys. So I think just the fact that you don't have those guys already signed, I mean, at least a few of them, so you can go into the next offseason not feeling like you're going to have to let all of these guys on the open market. I would definitely try to re-sign Hunter Henry. I've talked about it before. Obviously, the injuries are concerning, but at the same time, it's hard to find that kind of production at that position. And I think that is one of the most underpaid positions in the NFL where I don't think you would have to actually go out there where you don't have to spend a ton of money on a player that can go in and produce, you know, as well or better than most third wide receivers and things like that anyway. So I agree with all those guys. Obviously, it's easier said than done. And Keenan Allen, I would like to think that he would be trying to go on something like a three-year deal, then he's not going to get a five-year deal. But just so he can have one more chance, you know, still in his early 30s to try and cash in one more time, you know, and get that final contract of his career, which he could set himself up to do. But guaranteed money and total length of contracts is what players are looking for. So we'll see what happens with that. But obviously, still a huge concern. And for the Chargers, I think it's, you know, like you talked about, Tyrod Taylor, you have a guy in Justin Herbert behind him. Rayshon Jenkins, you have Nazir Adderley. But who's behind Michael Davis? You know, Mike Pouncey, you feel okay about having Scott Quessenberry and Dan Feeney playing center, mostly Scott Quessenberry, so that's not as big of a deal. But Melvin Ingram, you say, you know, have to have Uchenna step up or somebody like that. But we just haven't seen enough of any of those guys up till this point to feel like you're still going to have a legitimate pass rusher opposite Joey Bosa if he does come back. But we do have one more voicemail to get into. This is super fan Zach from Florida. Let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, guys. Zach from Florida again. Maybe one of your favorite callers, LOL. So I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Are you more looking forward to the two Denver games this upcoming season than in years past? Just think about it. On one side, in Denver now, you have Melvin Gordon, who actually took less than what we offered him just so he could play against us. And as you could also see, he cannot stop running his mouth about our team and about us not having fans. So I would love to see our defense just smother him whenever he has the ball in those games. And then on the other side, now playing for the Chargers, is Chris Harris Jr., who has actually come out and said that he wants to get some revenge and has a chip on his shoulder against his former team, the Broncos. To wrap up, are you more looking forward to these two divisional games than in years past? We'd love to get your thoughts, and bolt up.
All right, so obviously, I mean, one of the main talking points during this offseason has been Melvin Gordon and all of his comments about the Chargers, mostly negative, I mean, for the most part. I don't think he said anything that crazy, but he's continued to talk and talk, and obviously there's also the Chris Harris Jr. connection, who didn't end things very well in Denver and felt like there was some definite bad blood there, which is part of the reason he stayed in the division. Melvin Gordon said that as well, but they tried to give him more money the previous year than he ended up getting for Denver, so I kind of dismiss all of that. But David, do you think these matchups this season carry just a little bit of extra weight?
I mean, for the players, it absolutely does. I mean, Melvin Gordon feels slighted. He thinks that he deserves a higher contract, even though the Chargers, like you mentioned, offered him more money than he got from the Broncos. And then Chris Harris Jr., his meltdown that he had with the Broncos and that kind of sour ending, they're definitely going to get up for this game. They absolutely want to win this game. It's very important to them. Now, for me, do I get more up for this? Actually, I do, yeah. I definitely do. I think Melvin Gordon, all the trash talk, all the things that he said, the way he's carried himself, I think is just unprofessional. And some of the things just should not have been said. So I'm with Zach. I mean, I hope he absolutely gets smashed by the Chargers defense. I hope they hold him to 30 yards on 15 carries. I hope he has absolutely no success against the Chargers.
I mean, I think we know as far as Melvin Gordon's career goes, I mean, there's basically a 50-50 shot. He's either going to miss the game or have a bad game anyways. I mean, he was not the model of consistency with the Chargers. Only one season, averaging more than 4 yards per carry. His other career high was 3.9. He struggled mightily last year after coming back, and the Chargers tried to force feed him. That's a whole thing. But I think more what you're looking for is those individual moments. I think the actual game itself definitely carries some more weight, but that moment when, you know, Melvin Gordon gets crushed, or even the moment if he breaks off a big touchdown, what that's going to feel like, because you have to be, you know, ready for the good and the bad. But then you also have, you know, Chris Harris Jr. pick six against Drew Locke, things like that. I mean, those little moments, those moments where a guy like Chris Harris Jr. gets to talk trash and the Chargers get to talk trash to their former teammate, who was a very loved guy in the Chargers locker room. So I don't think it'll be totally bad blood, but I think there's a couple of Chargers defenders that'll definitely be getting up and ready for him once he comes through the hole that first snap in Denver. But we do have one more segment to get into, getting into some big one-hit wonders. A couple of Chargers showing up on PFF's list of the biggest one-hit wonders, and John Kegley's Father's Day segment coming up right after this. But first, I need to tell you guys that something we have all kind of been through at some point of our life, if you drive any sort of vehicle, is having to get your car fixed and not knowing if you're getting the best price for the parts that you need. I've had many mechanics give me prices on parts, and I just don't ever know if I'm getting a good price. But now I don't have to worry about that, because for any auto care need, I go to rockauto.com. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody, and they're reliably low, and they always offer the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is the only place to go for any kind of car parts you need. They have brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even a new carpet. And it's a unique catalog, and you'll never have to rely on a chain storefront to have the part in stock that you need. Right now, all you guys have to do is go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck, and write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at RockAuto.com. All right, well, it's time to get into the final segment of the show, talking about some cool PFF stats that were posted over the last few days, and also getting into a couple of one-hit wonders. But I do want to start with John Kegley, who has a Father's Day part of the segment he wants to get into, where he's gone through the Chargers history and found some really notable father-son duos that have played in the NFL at different times. And there were a lot of Chargers ties there. So, John, what do the Chargers need to know about fathers?
Well, I didn't go through and find all of them, because I don't think we'd have enough time in a segment to find them all.
But probably not.
I did find some, like Joey Bosa's dad, John Bosa, who was a first-round pick for the Dolphins as a defensive end. Didn't really do much with his career. So, yeah, bust is probably the right word for it. But his sons, Joey and Nick, haven't been bust so far.
Yeah.
There's also Marty Schottenheimer, the 14-2 coach for the Chargers. They got it. Had a lot of success coaching. There's his son, Brian Schottenheimer, who's been with the Seahawks, I believe with the Jets as well. He's had a bounce-around career, if you will, around the league as a position coach, sometimes offensive coordinator. There's the Winslows. There's the Hall of Fame tight end for the Chargers, Kellen Winslow, who had an amazing career. And then there's his son from the University of Miami, who had one Pro Bowl season and then had a lot of trouble off the field, and his career absolutely sucked. Then we go on to the 1994 Super Bowl team. Sean Jefferson, wide receiver for the Chargers, made a lot of big plays for the team during that season, including when he scored 2 touchdowns against the Jets in a 21-6 victory to win the AFC title, or to win the AFC West title. His son, Van Jefferson, is a second-round pick for the Rams out of this year, who played in Florida. So now we get to see what if he can lead the team to a Super Bowl like his dad did. And then to finish the father-son duo off, we have Charlie Whitehurst and his dad, David Whitehurst, who was a quarterback for the Packers and Chiefs in the late 70s, early 80s. And then Charlie Whitehurst was born in Green Bay and ended up playing for San Diego, Seattle, and Tennessee. But to close this out, it is the king of Father's Day, the guy that Father's Day was meant for, Philip Rivers, who has 9 kids. As Daniel Wade said, he gets 9 presents a year, even though it's like probably 9 ties or 9 pieces of toast, whatever it is. He is the king of Father's Day.
9 different colors of bolo ties. Yeah, that's what I like to think his Father's Day present is. But definitely the king of fathers. And obviously, happy Father's Day to all of you kings out there that are celebrating a Father's Day this weekend. Definitely want to shout out to all of the dads out there and all the Chargers dads out there as well. But great stuff. I definitely didn't know Charlie Whitehurst, a.k.a. Clipboard Jesus' dad, also played in the league. So that was definitely some news to me. And I was watching Van Jefferson, you know, watching tape on Van Jefferson, not even knowing his father played for the Chargers. So definitely some cool ties there. But I do want to get into this Pro Football Focus article about the biggest one-hit wonder seasons. And obviously, when I heard of the article, the first person that popped into my mind was Jason Verrett, because we obviously only got to see 1 good season from him, and the rest of his career was derailed by injuries. Probably the worst I've ever seen as far as just coming back year after year and just having something else pop up. So David, Jason Verrett, former first-round pick of the Chargers, definitely deserves to be on this list.
Oh, without question. I mean, I think anybody who followed the Chargers the last 10 to 15 years can think about how much potential that Jason Verrett had and how much that word was thrown around in correlation with him. I mean, you saw him in the 1 year that he actually played extensive time, and he absolutely was dominant. I mean, he had a 90.9 coverage grade, which was tied for the highest amongst qualifying cornerbacks. So he absolutely just dominated. I mean, I remember a couple of games where he played against top receivers like Antonio Brown and shut him down. And obviously that was back when Antonio Brown was in his absolute prime and he was just filleting everybody. Jason Verrett had that kind of ability, but unfortunately, injury after injury after injury derailed his career, and right now he's on the outside looking in for another opportunity, and who knows if anybody's going to chase that lightning in a bottle that he captured in that one great year for the Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it right there. The one full season that he played in, he was one of the best cornerbacks, if not the best cornerback in the entire league. And he always is going to hold a special place in Tom Telesco's heart because he was one of his first-round draft picks that he had. And I actually got to meet him at Barona Casino one time. That's a very deep cut only for people who live in San Diego. But I was starstruck, to say the least. Jason Verrett's obviously a great example. But one guy you would not think of for this list necessarily, unless, you know, you're John Kegley, who probably would have thought of it, is Scott Merchkowski, former Chargers center who had his one great year in 2009. Merchkowski never started more than 1 game in any other season besides 2009, when he started 13 games in replace of Nick Hardwick, who was obviously the longtime one of the greatest Chargers offensive linemen of all time. His 81.9 overall grade that year ranked 10th amongst 33 qualifying centers. So, John, I mean, this is a guy that came in 1 year. All you can ask of your backup is to come in there and not, you know, let your team down. And not only did he do that, but he played extremely well and then ended up just really never getting another chance.
Yeah, he played extremely well that year after Hardwick injured his ankle in the week 1 match against the Raiders, to the point his ankle was so bad he needed surgery and missed the next 13 games. And Scott Merchkowski came in, filled in great. The Chargers went 10-3 during that. But then on the game-winning drive against the Bengals in the Chargers 27-24 win, Scott Merchkowski got hurt when he hurt his right ankle, and Nick Hardwick had to come back for the final 2 games and the playoff game. So I think the injury is why Scott Murkowski never really got another chance. But during those games, he filled in so well, you kind of never talked about him. I remember I used to always call into the Chargers radio station after the games trying to win. And nobody ever talked about Scott Murkowski. And I was the only one who was like, this guy needs credit. I got to call in to talk about him. It was just amazing. If you don't hear your name, it's probably a good thing. That probably means you're not doing anything wrong. And he didn't. He rarely screwed up. There was probably one game where he messed up. I think that was his first start against the Ravens, when the first half he was just getting destroyed by Ray Lewis and Terrell Suggs. But the second half he picked it up so well. He picked up all the blitzes. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's funny to think that the Chargers actually had excess good offensive linemen at some point. And I think that Scott Quessenberry, you know, kind of deserves his own credit for having to come in a similar situation this year when Mike Pouncey went down and then Dan Feeney moved over before Forrest Lamp went down. Scott Quessenberry was one of the few good surprises from the team last year, and I thought he actually played very well. So another kind of hopefully not one-year wonder for the Chargers. But over the weekend, Pro Football Focus was putting out a bunch of really cool stats, and you can think of what you want of Pro Football Focus grades, but I think that they also have a lot of other really interesting stats as well. So one of the ones I will get to, because there was a few of them littered with Chargers, were pressures within 2 seconds for edge rushers since 2017. The top two names are very familiar. Joey Bosa leads the way with 43. Melvin Ingram has 39. That's ridiculous. I mean, for edge rushers, if you're a defensive tackle, I saw Aaron Donald had like 71. You're closer to the quarterback to start with. I'm not saying that it's a lot easier, but at the same time, it's totally different. To be able to get off the edge, beat your man, and get to the quarterback within 2 seconds, or at least have, you know, your presence be affecting his play in 2 seconds, is absolutely ridiculous. Another one that they had over the weekend was passer rating allowed to tight ends, and Derwin James's only full season in 2018. The passer rating James allowed was 21.3. The NFL average that year was 104.7. Just absolute craziness. And then another one here by Pro Football Focus. Coverage grades by a rookie since 2010. Casey Hayward Jr. tops the list, 91.6. Derwin James is fourth on the list with 87.7. And Desmond King is an 86.6. So David, when I put all three of those stats out there, obviously all of those are great, but which one would you say is the most surprising and most important?
Oh man, I mean, can we just appreciate how incredible some of these pickups of the Chargers have been? I mean, picking up Derwin James, 17th overall, signing Casey Hayward Jr., probably one of Tom Telesco's best free agent signings of his tenure. I mean,
Desmond King
in the fifth round. I mean, just absolutely incredible value. He's really picked up some major gems. But I think
predicted by John in the draft?
Ah, yes, of course.
John wanted him to go in like the fourth round, I believe.
John will never miss an opportunity to tout his incredible draft resume, if you will. He definitely has nailed several picks, so I'll give him that. But for me, I think the most impressive stat is the 21.3 passer rating against for Derwin James. I remember him one incredible play where he started out close to the line, then went in back and covered the tight end of the Steelers, and then picked off Big Ben and brought it back, I think, 30-plus yards. And I think at that moment, you're like, man, this guy is going to be incredibly special.
And a couple of the other really good ones were Chris Harris Jr. since 2006 has the highest grade of any undrafted defensive player in the entire NFL with a career grade over 94. And Phillip Rivers led all AFC quarterbacks last year with 30 turnover-worthy plays. So as many interceptions and things like that there were, there were even more that actually could have happened, which I think is, you know, part of the reason that you expect the Chargers not to drop off too much this year, just because you're not expecting to see a number like that from Tyrod Taylor. But another good show. We will be back with you guys on Wednesday. Until then, make sure to follow us on Twitter at LockedOnLAC and to like the Facebook page Locked On Chargers, as well as subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts or giving us a follow on Spotify and rating and reviewing. We'd really appreciate it. If you guys want to be the next callers on the voicemail show, make sure to call into 323-524-7924 on the Locked On Chargers voicemail line. Every Chargers voicemail gets played on the show. But we'll be back with you guys on Wednesday. Until then, take it easy and go Bolts.